It is time to bring in Arthur Schwartz, the food maven. Ladies and gentlemen, here's Arthur. Good morning, Arthur.
Good morning. Your mother or was it your grandmother was right, I think. And it's but you know what I have to say, the spring holidays start tomorrow, so we have hope.
Yes.
And here in Brooklyn, the crocuses are emerging.
And spring officially starts a little bit after 5 o'clock in the evening on Wednesday.
On Wednesday, so
yeah.
Oh, that's a little early too. That's yeah. the 20th, right?
Yeah.
Wednesday, yeah. So Purim is on Wednesday, and it's the harbinger of Passover to me, and I guess to most Jews, because Passover comes the same time as Easter, just as St. Joseph's Day, which is tomorrow, March 19th, to me is also a harbinger of Easter. And if you look at the food traditions of both these days, there's an overlap, if not actually the same. In you know another language, one's Jewish, one's Catholic, Catholic. I have to say, Saint Joseph was the father of Christ, and so this is an important day, and it's also Father's Day in Italy. I don't know about the rest of the world, the rest of the Catholic world. And Purim, you know, it's an interesting and funny joke, I think, because it's sort of true and funny at the same time. The old joke is the history of the Jews boils down to they tried to kill us, we won, let's eat. And Purim is definitely that holiday. In fact, not only let's eat, but let's drink, because actually a rule of Purim is that all adults should drink so much, celebrating the salvation of the Jews, and I'll tell this briefly, this story in a minute, that you should get so drunk you don't even recognize the name of the villain of the piece, whose name is Haman. Haman, I think sometimes it's spelled with two M's, I'm not sure, in Italian, Aman, is the name for a Purim treat. You know, there are a lot of Jews in Italy. There really are. And it's exactly the same that as Italians are making starting for St. Joseph's Day. There's so many overlaps. Let's start with the story of Purim. I just told you St. Joseph was Christ's father, so he's a very important saint. Do we say, you know, it was an Immaculate Conception? So I'm not actually sure how Catholics, characterize St. Joseph, but I do think they consider him the father, if not the father. So that's all I should take a comparative religion course, I decided this morning, because all this stuff fascinates me. For instance, most of them boil down to what's happening in nature. So this is the beginning of spring. Hence, Purim features some foods that you would eat in the spring, as well as St. Joseph's Day. You eat foods that regard early spring. One of these is legumes. In the south of Italy, the deep south of Italy and Sicily, they eat a very thick bean soup for St. Joseph's Day, and they mix it, the soup, with spring greens, which in the south of Italy at this time would be largely borage, which grows wild all over the place. And, you know, when I was wintering in Salerno, I always remember on the leaving, you know, one of the sad things about leaving Salerno in mid-late March was that the borage was all over the place and beautiful in vacant lots, as we call them in Brooklyn, and everywhere. And it has a beautiful purple flower that flowers there in the spring. Here in the Northeast, a lot of people grow borage in their gardens, but it doesn't flower until much later. In any case, borage has a sort of cucumber flavor, a very fresh spring tonic flavor, and you add that to the beans, and the reason you're cooking beans is because beans were main source of protein in the Southern Italian diet. And at this time of the year, you wanted to use up last year's harvest of beans, because beans are better when they're eaten within the first year after they're dried. Just a footnote here, the other day, I got an email from Rancho Gordo, which is a bean company.
Yeah, that's what the one you recommended we get. I've got a bunch of Rancho Gordos.
Yeah, so the other day they were talking about using up your winter beans. Or somebody wrote in a comment about how, you know, the beans are so much better when they're in the first year, which is true. So we're only learning about beans here in the north. but in poorer countries and more southern countries, they know more about beans. Anyway, the story of Purim is the evil Haman, who was essentially the prime minister of ancient
Persia.
Thank you.
The
king was known as Ahasuerus or Ahasveros. I learned that.
Or Ahasuerus. And, you know, it's just an impossible thing for a 4-year-old, say 5-year-old in Sunday school to say. Can you spell
exactly,
that, please?
But it was fun to say once you got it.
That's true. So that's why I'm going to say Ahasuerus, and I don't know if that's right.
He had many wives, and one of them was Esther. However, by the way, at court she was known as Hadassah, which is where we get that name. Yeah. So Esther was the niece of another minister of the king's, obviously, and they were Jewish. His name was Mordechai. And to make the story short, Esther and Mordechai connived, can't use another word, Haman hung, even though Haman wanted to slaughter all the Jews. He convinced the king that the Jews were against him. The king didn't know that his favorite wife was Jewish, and the niece of his minister. But she hid her Jewishness at court by taking the name Hadassah and by being a vegetarian, because she wanted to keep the kosher dietary laws. And although everybody at court ate whatever they wanted, she stuck to vegetarian foods, and among those were legumes. So isn't it interesting how it overlaps?
Absolutely.
In the Southern Italian Catholic world, you eat beans for St. Joseph's Day, and in the Jewish world, you eat beans for Purim, and St. Joseph's Day is tomorrow, Purim is Wednesday. They're always, you know, within a week or so of each other. You know, Jewish calendar is a lunar calendar, so it doesn't coincide with the universal calendar now. So that's the story. The other thing is pastry. I think this is fascinating. St. Joseph is the patron saint of pastry chefs. So one of the main foods, and this is something we eat in Brooklyn, for St. Joseph's Day, are fried zeppole, except that in they're also called beignet, using the French word, or you must say zeppole di San Giuseppe, because there are other kinds of zeppole, including a much more traditional, meaning ancient recipe that is just water, flour, not even an egg, and you knead it forever, and then you fry it, and then you boil it in honey. And I've eaten these several times. They're not my favorite thing. They're like little sort of honey-coated lead. But I did have them once. They were very good. But it's really an art, I think, to get this dough to have any tenderness. However, the zeppole di San Giuseppe is actually the same as the French beignet. Not quite the same as the New Orleans beignet. But beignet refers to a dough that is cream puffs. Cream puffs are a kind of beignet. Eclairs are a kind of beignet. It's all the same dough. You heat a milk and flour, and you beat in eggs. And in the case of Zeppoli di San Giuseppe, you would add a little sugar. And the eggs, of course, are leavening. And when you fry this, it puffs up, and you end up with a hollow center, and you hope, if you did it well, with a crisp surface. They're delicious when they're good. And in fact, in New York City, I think this is sort of all over the Northeast at this point, we have something called a French cruller. A French cruller, if you go into Dunkin' Donuts, they have French crullers. And in fact, a footnote, the French cruller is the least caloric of all the Dunkin' Donuts donuts. And I think it may be the best. But they run out of them. At least, I don't go to Dunkin' Donuts very often, but I know if I go in the afternoon, they're probably not there.
Everybody who sells French crullers runs out of them before anything else.
Yeah, haven't crullers been around for...
French crullers are the best.
I agree. So anyway, but for St. Joseph's Day, by the way, this was only introduced to Naples in the mid-late 19th century, actually it was mid-19th century, by a bakery that's still there on one of the main shopping streets of Naples called Pintauro. I wouldn't say I've had them at Pintauro. I wouldn't say that they're the best, but they are the original. But I do love Pintauro, if only because it's still there since 1840. And it's on Via Roma. That has another name, Via Roma. If you go to Naples, you'll find, ask a local where Via Roma is. They'll look at you like, how do you not know that? In any case, they're filled in Naples with pastry cream. They make these also in Sicily, but they fill them with ricotta, like cannoli cream, let's call it. Maybe without the chocolate chips. So, if your cannoli cream has chocolate chips. So, they're the same, except for the filling. And I must say, here in Brooklyn, the bakeries that make them, which is a lot, usually have both. And if you want the one that's with cannoli cream, you call them sfingi or sfinci. And if you want the one with custard or pastry cream, you say Zeppoli di San Giuseppe. So that's one overlap. Now, going back to Purim, the main food of Eastern European Jews for Purim was Humantashen. I was taught when I was in Hebrew school that it meant Haman's hat, because they're tri-cornered pastries, and he wore a tri-cornered hat, who knows. I think actually historically that could be correct. However, Tashen means pockets. So there are also Haman's pockets. Did he have triangular pockets on his robe? Maybe. Then there's another interpretation that they're Haman's ears, because it says Haman had twisted ears, whatever that means. I don't see that Humantashen, which are neat triangular pockets, look twisted, but I like the one that's Haman's pockets because they're pockets. Now, what goes into the pocket is interesting, because Esther was a vegetarian and ate seeds, nuts, and legumes for protein, the most traditional Humantashen filling is poppy seeds, mohn, M-O-H-N, in Yiddish and I think also in German. And Montashen, Humantashen, are the original. However, in my lifetime, this has evolved. Well, before my lifetime, they were filling them also with prunes. Now, let's remember, dried fruit. It's not in season. It's you're using up last year's. It's almost time to get the new year's. So that's another seasonal thing. And then, you know, it evolved. And in fact, in my book, Arthur Schwartz's Jewish Home Cooking, I devised a recipe of chocolate-filled Humantashen only by demand, meaning at that time I was on the radio with a responsive audience, and they were all asking me for a recipe for chocolate-filled Humantashen. So what I decided to fill mine with was a brownie mixture. So if you have my book, Arthur Schwartz's Jewish Home Cooking, you'll find a really, I must say, very, very good cookie dough, which I stole from a friend of mine, Carol Walter, my baking guru, and then I filled it with my original brownie mixture, and I like them. I still like poppy seeds, which of course are sweetened with honey, and I like prune very much. And then there are these other fruit ones. I see raspberry, I see strawberry, I don't know. They have, if you go into a kosher bakery these days, there's probably at least a half a dozen flavors of Hamantaschen. It's the most popular Purim food. However, also very popular in certain Jewish circles are chickpeas. Now, of course, the same reasoning for chickpeas is that, one, we're going to use up last year's crop, or maybe, one, we're going to honor the tradition of Esther and eat legumes. And in fact, my favorite chickpea thing these days, well, let me just say that I've been cooking a lot of chickpeas lately, so I'm filled with chickpea stuff, and because chickpeas are, you know, very healthy. And what am I making it? Only, oh, I've been throwing them into salad. But a half a can of chickpeas, which is about 3/4 cup of cooked chickpeas, is enough for two people in a big salad. And then I have a half a can left over. So I eat them like nuts. When I was a kid, I don't know if you remember this, Jill, or even in the Catskills where you grew up, Marshall, I'm sure they did this. They put out chickpeas seasoned with salt and pepper, just like that, It was called abis or nachit.
Well, I remember that just in regular on deli tables, actually.
That's right. In the dairy restaurant.
Right, which I
like Ratner's Rappaport's,
right, which I didn't love.
The famous restaurant, they would put that out, and you know, they wouldn't put bread on the table until you ordered something. Right. Although they did in later days, they did. That's where, you know, my grandfather, who was a waiter at a dairy restaurant, would say all the wives of the rich people in the neighborhood. This is Crown Heights. The women would come in the afternoon for coffee or tea and steal all the rolls for dinner. And the one time I went to that famous place in Miami, Miami Beach.
Oh, don't do this.
Okay. We'll remember it. Anyway, at that place, that tradition of roll thievery had evolved into, we'll give you what, do you want to take home what's left in the basket?
Right.
And everybody in Miami was taking it home. They would say, I'll take it for the doorman. They didn't want to admit that they were going to go home and eat them.
The whole lining your purse
with rolls.
With paper towels.
Especially if they were onion rolls, where the toasted onion would fall off into your handbag. I never.
Tell me about it.
Neither of my grandmothers would ever do that, especially my grandmother married to the waiter, because she knew how horrible the waiters thought that was. But no, they would never do that. But I bet you there were some grandmas or even mas who had whose handbags smelled like toasted onions. So isn't that interesting how these things overlap? But of course, it's about the season. It doesn't have to do with religion. These are traditions that probably come from really primitive traditions of when we're following the seasons. Of course, there's a bit of folk wisdom involved here, too, like, you know, use up the beans from last year. But then again, who has room for all these beans? Any questions?
You have to like beans, but even so.
You don't like beans, huh?
I don't love them. No, it's just really weird.
Yeah, I do. I love beans. In fact, the other day, and we're going to eat this today, we were away for the weekend, so I didn't have a chance to eat this over the weekend, but it's in the fridge and needs to be eaten today. But I guess it was Thursday or Friday. I made a chili kidney beans. I didn't do it because it is, but it's a vegan recipe, not just vegetarian, although you could make it un-vegan by topping it with sour cream or grated cheddar cheese or some other kind of cheese. But in fact, basically, they're vegan. And I did this because I always make fun of people who do this, but I did it myself. I bought like a half a case of kidney beans at Costco, not realizing I already had about a half a case of kidney beans in the house, canned Goya brand beans. They're good. And so I had to use up a lot of beans. This is not using up last year's dried beans. This is using up this year's mistaken canned beans. But I did it really easy. I mean, I did it with things I had in the house. The only thing I had to buy was a red pepper, because I had this huge, huge Spanish onion. I chopped that up, sautéed that with a big green pepper and a big red pepper, both of which I diced. And I sautéed all of that together in, actually, not even olive oil. I used, I don't know, something got into me, and vegetable oil. I bought a big thing of vegetable. You know, it doesn't last forever. So I wanted to use some in this place. So I sautéed those until they were really quite soft, maybe 10 minutes or so. And then I added chili powder. Another thing, by the way, I wanted to use up. I bought this chili powder because it looked like it was going to be fabulous, but it wasn't fabulous. It was just very good. So I'm thinking I should use it up. So I put in 2 tablespoons of my chili powder, 1 tablespoon of dried oregano, 1 teaspoon of cumin. You can leave that out if you hate cumin. And I cooked that for a couple of minutes. And then I added a half of a large can or a 14-ounce can. If you have crushed tomatoes, that's okay. I opened up a can of peeled tomatoes and put half of them in and chopped them up. And then I let that simmer for about 15 minutes or so, 20 minutes. And then I threw in 2 cans of beans, 1 drained, 1 not drained, and let that cook for about 20 minutes. And that was, and salt. You don't need pepper because the chili, at least this chili powder was pretty spicy. But if yours is a mild chili powder, you can add a little bit more hot with cayenne or something. And that's it. I let it simmer 20 minutes. And by the way, they're even better reheated, so I'm looking forward to them today. You can have that as rice and beans.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. You know, I don't know. Is it the texture of beans that bothers you? That's
yeah.
What most people say.
It's kind
of. What about chickpeas?
It's just, look, I've just got limited. I like hummus, but a limited. It's very heavy. My body. I just.
Well, hummus is another story.
But
what about a whole chickpea?
Chickpeas are tops. Chickpeas are great.
I know.
Chickpeas are great.
Well, here you go. So it's
in the old world,
oldie worldy.
There only were in biblical times. There were only lentils, and chickpeas, and fava beans.
Obviously, I didn't do very well in biblical times.
No, you would not have done. No, you wouldn't have done. Well, growing up in southern Italy.
That is true.
You would have wound up on the cross.
where, you know, they're in fact, it's central Italy. You know, it was the Florentines were known, the Tuscans, rather, the whole region. They were known as the bean eaters.
Uh-huh.
As in the south, and the bean eaters made fun of the people in the south by calling them the leaf eaters.
I was the leaf eater type.
Because in the South, people forage still and pick a lot of greens that are just growing. Like I told you, borage, dandelion. They don't have dandelion in the South. They have a chicory. So this is the time that the chicory is peeping out of the ground, and it's not nearly as bitter as it will be later. And that's something you throw in your soup. Another one, wild fennel. And I, you know, regular listeners will know that I used to grow wild fennel here in Brooklyn until my building management decided it looked too messy. But I thought it was a great. I had to point out that the Botanic Garden, the Brooklyn Botanic Garden, has a whole bank of fennel as a decorative plant, and they don't think it's messy. But anyway, when the first fronds of wild fennel come up out of the ground, that's their best time. And in Sicily, you go to the market. In Catania, you go to the Pescheria market. And at this time of the year, they're selling huge bunches of wild fennel fronds. You know, it's a plant that you don't eat the bulb. It's an inconsequential bulb. But you do eat the fronds, which are much more flavorful than the Florence fennel, which is the bulb. And then you, in the fall, you eat the seeds. That's where fennel seed comes from. So I think my time is up.
It is.
And so I'm. You can see I'm really excited that it's almost spring.
I totally understand. You and everybody else. And
you're going to get melt and mud.
Oh, we had such mud.
Mud. Mud season.
The mud started.
And mud season is here.
That's a good sign.
Yeah, it's been a total roller coaster and a lot of laundry.
I know. But, you know, blizzard, you know?
It's the light, and if you look at the Big Dipper, it's upside down from where it was at the vernal equinox, ladies and gentlemen.
All right. So happy Purim. Happy St. Joseph's Day. I'm going to indulge. We're going to go to a really good bakery with a friend who's visiting from New Orleans. And so I'm excited.
French crawlers. French crawlers today. Okay.
Well, no.
No.
No, Zeppoli di San Giuseppe.
Okay.
Or actually, this bakery is Neapolitan, but they'll also have the sfinci with cannoli cream. And they do these very well.
Okay.
And today and tomorrow will be there'll be so many people, they're going to be fresh every minute.
All right.
Bye.
Bye. Thank
you. Have a great week, everybody.
You too. Have fun.
Arthur Schwartz, the food maven here on Robin Hood Radio. And, of course, you can hear Arthur live every Monday morning and rebroadcast on the weekend and also during the week.